Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. After 2 consecutive weeks of interviews, which I enjoyed very much, it's back to my original format, which means I have 3 weeks of Sheldon Neidl's messages here to cover and to make sure I get through what I have here. For the programme, obviously I've had to do some editing to bring it down to the main points, and I've done the same with quite a few items of general news. Then for my UFO come ET spot, I've got a very interesting contact report going back some 40 years, plus a short report of life on another planet. So I will start, as usual, with the Sheldon Neidl messages, which he brings through on behalf of the spiritual hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. In this particular message, he was referring to their Earth allies and saying that they needed to begin to take over many of the covert networks formerly controlled by the dark, which are used to funnel huge unaccounted for funds that are stolen or rerouted by members of the dark cabal in positions of high authority. These sums are used primarily to fund the development of a great many exotic weapons systems that are intended to be used against us, meaning the Galactic Federation, of course, or to create the spectacle of a supposed invasion by off-worlders that would validate the imposition of global martial law. These threats have now been neutralized. In addition, our Earth allies now possess the names of many trusted key individuals who had been sabotaging their efforts and in so doing aiding the cause of the dark. I have to comment there that is always a possibility when you're working on the positive side. Inevitably, the ones who are against it try to infiltrate your organisation and put a spanner in it, as they say. This message goes on to say that first contact is not a rescuing mission. Rather, it is the final step in your evolution back to full consciousness. This is re-emphasized here to make a point. We come not just to observe you or warn you indirectly of your past folly. We voyage here as loving mentors to help you complete the journey that heaven set you upon long ago. Becoming conscious is about connecting with who you really are and recognizing the fact that you share infinite creation with a vast spiritual family. Still talking about first contact, the message says, the more you scrutinize the implications of first contact, the more you appreciate its immense complexity. This syndrome describes the nature of our quest here from the start. The overall purpose of this mission is to find a way to bring this not yet created star nation into the fold of the Galactic Federation. And so a huge education project became an essential first step for contact with you. Your solar system is to return to its original constitution and revive divine decrees given to our first colonists some 2 million years ago. The authority for this first contact is divine decree. Lord Surya gave us very detailed provisos before the first colony of Hyperborea was settled 2 million years ago. These points were re-stressed when we again set up colonies on your world around 900,000 years ago. All of you are genetic progeny of these first Lemurian colonists. The physical process for instituting massive change on your world is a rather challenging proposition when we are not allowed to avail ourselves of our technological advantage. I comment there that the reason, of course, is that by using what may be termed force in that way would be going against their own freedom. And as a collective consciousness, we have to be allowed to work that way. But at the right time, when first contact is made, of course, which will have been done because it will be largely with our approval, then there will be no problem. I now move on to the second report of Sheldon Idles, talking here about the machinations of your last dark cabal are going ahead on schedule. And that, of course, is referring to their rundown and final collapse. This part of the report reads that the monies that make up the first domino are getting ready to roll and will start the train of events that forms the foundation of your new reality. These new regimes held the beginning of a global cooperation that puts an end to a great many wars and smaller conflicts currently raging across the face of Mother Earth. However, we intend to await for the divine right moment to announce formally our mass landing date. Until then, we desire your new governments to spend their time supervising the disbursement of your prosperity, carrying out various pollution cleaning projects, and unveiling a whole host of suppressed technologies. The interim technology can take you off your oil-dependent economy and provide a revolutionary means to generate electricity, power your vehicles and travel by air. In addition, there is a very effective process that can solve your growing solid waste problem while supplying you with an effective and organically safe way to produce the fertilizers needed for mass cultivation of your global food requirements. These advances are a stepping stone to what we shall introduce you to, namely mass energy converters. These can reproduce food, housewares, clothing, and houses and buildings, large and small. A comment there, that's a very interesting piece of equipment, isn't it, a mass energy converter. Because we have nothing to compare with it, I guess it's very puzzling to imagine what form that can take, be able to produce or reproduce things of that nature. This message goes on to say that our coming is a spiritual watershed and first contact, a divine convergence. Your priority from then onwards is to relearn your true identity whilst also reuniting with your spiritual and space families. Now that's the end of the highlights I've made of the first two messages, and now I come to the final one, which of course is the one that came out this week. Again, the people channeling through Sheldon Idle are talking of their Earth allies, which obviously must be people in places of reasonably high authority to be able to help the cause, I imagine. And it reads that our Earth allies are busy working out the last legal details concerning the coming resignation of the present US regime. Now that's a very definite statement there. It has been hinted before that this would be the way in which they would be removed. But I think that statement leaves no doubt as to what is going to happen. And if they have got to the point where they're working out the last legal details, knowing that legal matters often take ages to complete, I nevertheless feel that we may well see something before the end of the year. I hope so. The report goes on to say, in addition, the dismantling of the Federal Reserve Bank and the introduction of a new global banking system are likewise nearing the final stages. They're talking about the new system and saying that it will be introduced in three stages, and the first is to be part of the debt forgiveness process. I mean, that will be a wonderful thing alone to take away that worry and the problems that being in debt causes. They go on to say that they're going to make it possible, as they say, quote, to take your banking system off the present highly inflated fiat money footing. Then follows a controlled massive deflation of prices and other matters related to pre-inflation levels. Apparently they're going to give people adequate time to adjust because they are going to make adjustments to bring the prices down. And I think in the course of that, they intend to hold people's mortgages steady or freeze them and ensure that people don't lose their houses because of inflation and debts on that side of the market. They go on to say that it is expected that the issuance of credit will be greatly curtailed. But one has to think here that with the program of abundance, there must come a point after not too long where possibly very few people will be looking for credit anyway. Although one has to bear in mind, I suppose, that in the third world they are already quite poor. So possibly for the amount of projects they need to bring their standards of living up, perhaps credit is essential. The report goes on to say the abundance, which has literally taken centuries to amass, is the foundation for what our Earth allies intend to build, since money to date has predominantly been used to acquire and maintain power. The first step of meaningful change is to end the huge monetary disparity that characterizes your society. That would be nice indeed. I'll move on a bit, and there's a reference again here to First Contact, saying that it is reaching a most exciting point, and that they mention in past messages how diligently their crews are preparing for this blessed event. And I quote, they say, "In fact, a multitudinous host of ascended masters who are to accompany us have taken up a most sacred series of chants. This outpouring of intent signals the proximity of our arrival on your beloved shores. These continuous rituals further heighten our growing excitement over our coming mass reunion with you. The swift approach of these things mean that your many body angels and spiritual guardians are stepping up the pace of your multi-leveled body changes. The medical teams working on you inform us daily about the escalating demands made on them by heaven." Probably worthwhile mentioning there, inasmuch as they refer to their medical teams working on us, and of course this is a painless transformation of which we are possibly only slightly aware. And as our energy changes, I believe it is a fact that some people do get symptoms of dizziness, lightheadedness, and minor things which are clearly of no great concern. I move on now to the general news, and one event, shall I say, that got away was one which was circulated on the email and from one of the websites, and it was a message from Michael David, and he sent this to the Galactic Federation of Light Yahoo group, and it was referring to an ASARA announcement, and it was saying in the email of 20th of August that there would be an announcement taking place that day. It would be broadcast live on the emergency broadcast system, and it would be a message that could possibly be delayed up to several hours. And the EBS announcement in the US would be followed by a simultaneous global broadcast of the swearing-in of the new transitional government in the United States, saying that other countries such as Canada or the UK will be making similar announcements within the next week or so. Now, unfortunately, that event never came to be. I have to say it wasn't confirmed elsewhere, not that that necessarily is the criterion for making one-off message out of order. There will be times, I guess, when there will be just one source that will make a very special announcement about some of the events that we are expecting. And indeed, I think if that is the case, I would be looking to Sheldon Nidal's source of contacts to be the ones to do it. But there we are. It's not the first time that a very, shall we say, strong, very definite announcement has come out about an event like this, and it hasn't transpired. But sometimes they are planned, and there are reasons why, I suppose, at the last moment, they don't go ahead. Now, an article by Greg Palast. I don't know his site, but I believe he's a journalist on one of the newspapers. I haven't got the whole detail here, unfortunately, but the subject of it will suffice and tell you what it's all about. This was an announcement that came out yesterday, and it was about New Orleans. They were saying that an inside source had given him some information saying that by midnight on Monday, the White House knew certain information. And Dr. Ida Van Heerden, who was deputy director of the Louisiana State University Hurricane Center and the chief technician advising the state on saving lives during Katrina, was not made aware at the Emergency Operations Center. And apparently nobody was aware that the levees had breached on the dikes, which led, of course, to the great floods. Now, Van Heerden was interviewed by Greg Palast, and a little conversation went ahead as follows. It's only a short one, but it gets you to the main points here. And Van Heerden revealed that FEMA knew at 11 o'clock on the Monday of that event that the levees had breached. And at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, they flew over the 17th Street Canal and took a video of the breach. So the question was asked, so the White House wouldn't tell you the levees had breached. And Dr. Van Heerden said they didn't tell anybody. And Greg Palast said, and you're at the emergency center. Dr. Van Heerden said, yes, I mean nobody knew. The Corps of Engineers knew, FEMA knew, none of us knew here. And I could not get the White House gang to respond to the charges. Now, that leaves a big question. Why? Why on earth would the White House not tell the state to get the remaining folks out of there? And Greg Palast believes that the answer is cost, political and financial cost. And he reads it this way, that a hurricane is an act of God, but a catastrophic failure of the levees is an act of Bush. That is, under law dating back to 1935, the breach of the federal levee system makes the damage and the deaths a federal responsibility. That means, as Van Heerden points out, that these people must be compensated. Now, he doesn't say whether or not he's going to take that cause up or who's going to press forward with it, but no doubt that revelation having been made, someone will certainly do that. I come now to the message that was the original one, talking of the non-event to do with the NASA announcement that was going to take place. What happened was the first message about it came out on one day, and then 2 days later there was a follow-up one. But I'm only looking back at this because it was telling a little bit more detail of what was supposed to happen. For example, that the current presidential administration, both houses of Congress and the Supreme Court, were to be replaced. And as they mentioned in the second message, the Federal Reserve Bank system, which by the way is a private central bank, was being abolished and replaced by the US Treasury. And the currency would be returned to the gold standard. So that didn't happen. But I have to say, I'm sure it will, because that is basically what the Galactic Confederation have said many, many times in their own messages, fish killed and died. Most of my information comes from emails. It's surprising how much information is circulated around, and I seem to be on a lot of people's list. What I'm referring to now is an article by Richard Becker. He's the Western Regional Coordinator of the Answer Coalition. And this report came out on Friday, August the 3rd. And he was talking about what he called a crime against humanity committed by the occupying power in Baghdad. And he said that for the past 24 hours, Baghdad has had virtually no running water. Major parts of the city of 6 million people have lacked running water for 6 days, while daily high temperatures have ranged from 115 to 120 degrees. The tiny amount of water dripping through the pipes is causing many of those who must drink it to suffer acute intestinal illness. According to reports, not enough electricity is available to run Baghdad's water pumps. This in a country with vast energy resources. Corporate media outlets, to the extent they have reported this horrific and mind-boggling story at all, have treated it as a failure on the part of the Iraqis. In reality, it is an appalling war crime committed by the occupying power, the US military. It threatens the lives of tens of thousands of people in the short term and unthinkable numbers of people unless it is rectified immediately. Now, what he bases that claim on is that according to the Article 55 of the Geneva Conventions, that goes back to 1949, to which the US government is a signatory, it reads, quote, "To the fullest extent of the means available to it, the occupying power has the duty of ensuring the food and medical supplies of the population. It should in particular bring in the necessary foodstuffs, medical stores, and other articles if the resources of the occupied territory are inadequate." So there you are. There's a firm basis for making that claim against the US occupying forces, I suppose. I'll move on now to an item that came off the rumormillnews.com site. Very good one for general news, especially what I call the underground stuff. And it was posted by Ray Elin's mailbag on Tuesday the 7th of August. And he was referring to some interesting information regarding the Minneapolis bridge collapse. And he said, "I was watching BBC News 24 at about 3 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, and whilst covering the bridge collapse, I had a witness on via telephone who spent a few minutes explaining how he walks under the bridge almost daily, and he had witnessed the fact that large holes had been drilled or cut through the concrete supports." Now, they covered that angle for a while, and later he was cut off in mid-air, apparently, from one of the talks he was giving, and that one didn't appear again, so one can guess someone pulled the plug on that story. Anyway, he was saying that about 7 hours later, the BBC News 24 were no longer reporting that particular story, and he said not only that, but they were reporting that all rescue efforts were stopped after a couple of hours, and that the police had cordoned off the bridge. So, and he says, "Since when do rescue efforts stop? When it gets dark, especially when there are supposed to be people in cars at the bottom of the river." And that's the end of the report that I have, anyway. Probably an extract. But it does beg the question, doesn't it? Now, I have to say that one might not necessarily see anything odd in the fact that someone saw that large holes had been drilled or cut through the concrete supports, because apparently they were doing some work on the bridge at the time, or had been doing work before it collapsed. Can't imagine what they would be drilling or cutting holes in the concrete supports for. So I guess one mustn't always jump to hasty conclusions. Now, apparently that report came off a website called expansions.com. So if you're interested in following that one up, that is the website to go to. Now, more recent, from, I think it must be a magazine, is it, called Dictatorship? I'm not sure now, or is that just a section on another website? I haven't got the name of it, unfortunately. But it's talking about something which is generally known anyway, and that is about the federal plan for ID cards. And it's just commenting on the fact that Americans may need passports to board domestic flights or to picnic in a national park next year if they live in one of the states defying the Federal Real ID Act. And it's saying the cards will be mandatory for all federal purposes, which includes boarding an airplane or walking into a federal building, nuclear facility or national park. And Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff told the National Conference of State Legislatures last week that citizens in states that don't comply with the new rules will have to use passports for federal purposes. There we are, isn't it awful? Dear me. Never mind. I don't think any of those things will actually come to fruition. Fortunately, I think we will have moved into the period of change, and they will become things of the past. Now, one item I saw of news that particularly interested me was the fact that an anti-war protest group had been fined $10,000. And that group was the one called Act Now to Stop War and End Racism, which, if you take the letters of each word, is answer. And apparently they face a $10,000 fine from the city of Washington if it failed to remove thousands of flyers it has posted to advertise the September anti-war march. Isn't that surprising? You could say that everybody intends to start out with a peaceful anti-war march, and yet they're going to be fined for letting people know about it. I mean, what do the authorities see? I think we know that they fear the truth, and they don't really want to see the extent to which the public would support an anti-war movement. Now, the group said, people trying to put the fine on them, that they have been told that they have had 72 hours to remove every poster or the fines will go into effect. The anti-war demonstration, apparently, if you're interested, is to go ahead on September the 15th in Washington, D.C. And they face, apparently, tens of thousands of dollars in additional fines in the coming days. They didn't explain why, but I guess because the flyers and other means of advertising have gone ahead. And I think that's very sad in what we call a democracy, particularly in the West, where we tend to feel we're more democratic, perhaps, than other parts of the world, that you can be fined for arranging something of that nature. I think that's our right, and we should have the freedom to do it. Now, you've probably heard of the Amaro, which is reckoned to be a coin that's going to be used in both the US, America, and Canada. And apparently for months, these stories have been going around about the possibility that the United States, Canada, and Mexico would be merged into a new sovereign entity called the North American Union. Now, governments have denied it publicly, and others have called the people referring to this possibility as conspiracy nuts. But, according to this article, they finally have the proof. They are coining money in the name of the Amaro. Now, where this information came from was the Hal Turner show, and he received images of the new unit of currency that they are planning. And, of course, it will, if it comes to be, replace the dollar and the peso in all three countries once they are merged out of existence. Now, whether that's good or not is not the point here. It's the fact that all this is going on underhanded without the knowledge of the people. And this said that more details are pending. One thing is absolutely clear. The government of the USA, Canada and Mexico are engaged in a conspiracy to merge three countries without the knowledge or consent of the people. And it's a shame you can't see what I'm looking at, assuming you haven't seen it already. And I'm looking at the front and reverse side of three coins. And strangely enough, the dates are 2007. They've all got the eagle on them. And on the back of two of the coins, they've got something that closely resembles the way in the UK we used to show the Britannia on the back of our coins. But on these, it has a shield on it which says Liberty. It doesn't look like the Statue of Liberty, so I think it's not actually related to that as such. But there we are, something to sort of keep your eyes and ears open for. 9/11 never goes away. I think whatever show I have, or I do the general news, there's inevitably something about 9/11. And this relates to a firefighter who is going himself to set the historical record straight. This was posted on August the 8th. It came off a website called wearechange.org. And it was by Manny Badillo, who's a victim's family member. And it reads that firefighter John Troder, assigned to Engine Company 10 directly across the street from the World Trade Center complex, held back tears and described his first-hand experience on September the 11th. His story directly contradicts many aspects of the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks, though corroborates many other eyewitnesses' testimonies. And the only item I really want to speak about on this one is this. He said that as they were making their way up the floors, firefighter Schroeder heard a huge explosion. He said the elevators just blew out. He couldn't believe it. The plane hits 80 floors up, but the elevators explode at least 5 minutes later. It was unreal. I think for anybody who's followed the revelations about 9/11, that would not be any surprise, but it's another added bit of information from an eyewitness that proves that there were other explosions in the buildings, though it wasn't what they originally said. From a website called worldreports.org, they quoted an article in the UK paper Sunday Telegraph, and they were referring to the meeting which had happened not long before between the new Prime Minister of Britain, Mr. Brown, and Bush at Camp David, suggesting that it went very badly, since Mr. Bush was being told what he didn't like hearing included being treated by proxy for a piece of Her Majesty the Queen's mind over one stealing with White House connivance, the Queen's gold, and secondly, Bush Jr.'s hijacking via his Treasury Secretary of the Leo Wanta settlement, which Her Majesty had told the G8 meeting in June needed to be transferred, she said, for the sake of the whole humanity. Right here comments that statement, by the way, revealed in what exceptional esteem Ambassador Wanta is held by Her Majesty, is an opinion shared in what exceptional esteem, is an opinion shared by the Chinese parties, who have been further enraged by the continuation of Paulson's criminal deceptions and ruses designed to hang on to and exploit the $4.5 trillion originally paid to the ambassador by the People's Republic of China in 2006 in accordance with the high standards of integrity. There we are. That is actually good. That story still comes up and it isn't allowed to fade into the background. I don't think there's much chance of that anyway, because Chris Story follows that one for his financial magazine here from London. Now, a news item I saw, which strongly surprised me, was one indicating that Centuriae Sitchin, who is a very well-known writer on the subject of ancient Mayan and Sumerian stories, is being put on a charge, and he's being tried, or will be tried, by a grand jury. Now, I can imagine that any action taken against Sitchin is probably over his great research that he's carried out, and the revelations about the contact the Sumerians had with ETs. And I guess a lot of people don't like what he writes. He's a very meticulous and very expert translator of the Sumerian tablets. The person reporting on this said, my name is Sam Wilson. I'm a new attorney at Aiken Gump Strauss Tower Field, and I'm working as staff to a co-counsel in the case. We were hired by Centuriae Sitchin to prepare his defence. And he gives a number of reasons why he's put on charge or being charged. I just wanted to refer to one that I thought sounded to me rather ridiculous, and that was advocating overthrow of the US government. His final charge is telling, that is advocating the overthrow of the government in a speech in 2005 and more recently in January of this year. And the writer here said, I'm following this case because I heard during our conference that many believe the US is trying to stop the knowledge of 2012 conspiracies. While I do not personally support it, I still believe this trial should be known. So there we are. And he said, therefore, I have had a blog created to track the trial, as I will be there every day. That interests me, and I shall certainly go and have a look at that one. And if you too are interested, the site is called the link to 2012trial.blogspot.com. The first part, link to 2012, has an underscore. So it's link underscore to underscore 2012trial.blogspot.com. I'll be interested to find out a little bit more as to what prompted all this, whether it's a put-up job or not, I don't know. But what I highlighted there out of the charges against him is one where I feel that if you have a government which isn't doing its work properly or has committed crimes against its own people or humanity, I would have thought you had every right to advocate its removal. But there we are. Got a few items left now of general news. This one was a letter sent to the editor of Nexus magazine, which is one that's based in the UK. Excellent magazine if you like reading about the more unusual items and matters that are usually swept under the carpet. Then the Nexus magazine is one to find, and I do believe it's available in the States. This was an article written by Tony Bushby. He's the author of a number of books, and this one that they referred to was an extract from the Bible Fraud. And he wrote to the editor saying, Dear Duncan, reliable inside sources claim that Pope Benedict's recent Vatican meetings with US President George Bush and the outgoing British Prime Minister Tony Blair were held to finalise plans for faking an event purporting to be the second coming of Jesus Christ. This appears to be a move by the Christian leaders to avert the crisis of faith that the suppressed Fatima message prophesied would cause the demise of Christianity by 2015. An insider close to the recent meetings claims that the church's ploy is to project a holographic image into the sky in a third world country, one showing Jesus to an international TV audience coming in the clouds, as narrated in the New Testament. And the writer here, Tony Bushby, says that this is technically possible and was graphically displayed at the 2007 grand final of American idol when Celine Dion sang a live duet on stage with a brilliant three-dimensional colour holographic reproduction of the long-dead Elvis Presley. There we are. I tend to believe it if it's in the name of Tony Bushby, I really do. I do get his sort of newsletter, and I admire his work, and I don't suppose anybody is 100% correct when they do their research, but that one sounds very possible to me. So we'll keep our ears open for that one as well. Apparently the Humboldt County CA Democrats lead the nation in challenging Bush on dictatorial powers. And this was an article submitted by Chip on Saturday, the 11th of August. And it was said to be, and what is believed to be, first in the nation, that the Humboldt County Democratic Central Committee has called for bipartisan action by Congress to overturn two executive orders recently issued by President George Bush that the committee believes would allow him to assume dictatorial powers during a national emergency and to confiscate the assets of those opposing the Iraq war at any time, both of which are in violation of the rights of citizens under the US Constitution. Now, if you want to find out more about that one, I haven't got a website, but I'm guessing if you entered the search name Eureka CA Times Standard, you might get something on that one. That evidently is the source. Now, a final item in the general news is just something I was pleased to see, that there is a group that has been formed and held a global conference on poverty removal. At a recent conference, there was a Dr. Morris, who also serves as president of Maharishi University of Management in Iowa, USA. And I just wanted to quote what he said. And it was, quote, "It puts us to pain and shame that half of our dear world family is living in dire poverty. Therefore, we are, on our own level, and even from the level of existing wealth in the world, inspired to make efforts to eliminate poverty and raise the standard of living of poor families in our world. The path to be adopted is to give the poor education and training about the nature of life, and not to give them minimum wages, but fairly good level of wages, so they can live in proper homes, have proper clothing and healthy food, and sufficient means for the education of their children, at least corresponding to the middle income bracket." I think that's a very nice sentiment, and I hope that out of the conference came some movements towards achieving that. Although I have to say that once the Galactic Federation were able to instigate their changes, that would indeed be part of their project. I don't know whether the conference will ever be rebroadcast, but it did go out live at the time, but I guess you might even find the whole transcript of it. It should be on the website globalfinancialcapitalny.org. So I'll repeat that in case you didn't get that all. It's globalfinancialcapitalny, obviously from New York, .org. Now that finishes my general news. I'll go straight away to the UFO report that I have from my favourite source, which is the Flying Source Reviews going back to the 60s, and this was one from September 1969, and it refers to Gary Wilcox and the UFOnaut, quite a good name there, 28-year-old man at the time in September. No, it wasn't, it was a report going back a further number of years. At 10 o'clock on the 24th of April 1964, Gary Wilcox, who is a dairy farmer, was... Well, let's see, I've got to pick up where the story is exactly here. I don't want to read out a lot of bump. Here we are. He was checking an area with someone else, and he saw some tracks near the scene of a reported incident where there appeared to have been a UFO contact. And the story of it reads as follows, that Gary was milking his cows, and he said that he milked some of his heavy milkers 3 times a day. And he thought that that caused him to lose some of his sleep. And when he gave a statement about the unidentified object he saw, he wasn't very lucid, shall we say, and he also admitted he drank a little, but he said he wasn't reporting at that time under the influence of drink. I think the people interviewing him were wondering why his statements were not perhaps very in line with the incident as it was reported by other people. Anyway, apparently he walked to the top of the hill where this spaceship was reported to have landed or hovered, and that was not far away from the farm building where he worked. And people who checked the area found impressions in the ground. And that was a week after the reported incident. And the only thing unusual noted at this time was that the ground where the ship was reportedly hovering was damp. So they reckon that could have been a spring or a ground formation, because the ground otherwise surrounding that area was comparatively dry. Now, I'm trying to save time here by moving on a bit, and here we come. It's referring back now to the actual report that's brought that later examination about. And Gary said it was about 10 o'clock in the morning of the 24th of April 64, and he was spreading some manure with his spreader across some of his fields. And the weather was clear and the sun was shining and the ground was dry. And he happened to look up from the field where he was working and noticed a shiny object on the top of the hill. And at first he thought it was some abandoned piece of equipment. But when he looked again, he noticed that the object was something he didn't immediately recognise. So he started driving his tractor up the hill towards the object. And the distance from the bottom of the hill to where he first noticed it, he guessed was about 800 yards. So it's a fair distance away. And he said while he was driving up the hill toward the object and about 100 yards from it, he said, "This is when I thought it was a wing fuel tank from an airplane. I wasn't scared or anything. I parked the tractor at this point and walked the remaining 100 yards to the object. The first thing I noticed was that it was off the ground. It was a little bigger than a car in length. It was an oblong shape, something like an egg. There were no seams, rivets or anything like that. It was completely smooth. It was aluminium colour. I touched the thing and the metal was harder than aluminium and it did not move. I don't know whether it was on legs or hovering in the air. It was about 20 foot in length, 4 foot high, and 15 or 16 foot wide. And while I was standing there, there was no feeling of vibration or sound, and it was not hot or anything. While I was touching it, two small men about 4 foot high came out from under the tank object. I don't know where they came from. Each of them was carrying a tray about a foot square. The tray looked like it was made of the same stuff of the ship tank. Inside the tray is what appeared to be sod. I was standing about a foot away from the ship. I will refer to this object as a ship from now on. I first thought it would be a tank. The two little men started walking towards me from under the ship. They stopped about 1 yard away from me. Then it sounded like one of them spoke and said, "Don't be alarmed, we have spoken to people before." Their voices did not sound like a voice I could describe. I could understand what was said, but cannot tell whether they were speaking English or not. One of the men was standing in the rear of the other. I could see that both of these 4-foot-high men had arms and legs the same as us. I couldn't tell whether they had feet or hands the same as us. They were quite broad for such short persons. I could not distinguish whether they had shoulders or not. They seemed to just go straight down. They had no face, such as eyes, ears, nose, mouth or hair. The voice seemed to be coming from about them rather than from either of them. There was a voice, but I don't know where it was coming from. insofar as their body was concerned. They seemed to have a sort of suit on that covered where the head would normally be, located all the way down. When they raised their arms, you could see a wrinkle where our elbow would be located. The colour of this completely smooth cover all type suit was whitish aluminium tin colour. There was no evidence of hair, there were no seams or stitches or pockets. The only thing I noticed was the wrinkle when they moved their arms at the elbow. They said, "We are from what you know as the planet Mars." They then asked me what I was doing. I told them that I was spreading manure. They asked me to explain what this was in more or less detail. They seemed interested in what this manure did. They seemed interested. So I told them what it was and where it came from. They asked what else I made stuff grow with. That's when I told them about the lime and fertilizer. They did not say anything about the lime, but were interested in the fertilizer. I told them it was made of bones from dead animals. During the time I was explaining to them the function of the fertilizer, they asked if they could have some. I told them that I would have to go down to my barn and get some. Then one spoke up and said that they were travelling this hemisphere. I don't know which one it was, as I said before, the voice seemed to come from the front one, the one closest to me. I then asked them if I could go. They then said that they could only come here, that is to Earth, every 2 years. Their conversation seemed to shift rapidly from one subject to another. They mentioned that we should not send people out into space. They said that they have watched us. They said that we could not survive if we went to Mars, and that they could not survive here on Earth. They also said that they got stuff out of the air to live on, and that they were here to see what they could learn about our organic material, because they felt the Earth and Mars, plus some other planets, might be changed around. They said that there was a difference in the gravity pool and that there was a change taking place. They said they did not fly near cities because the fumes or stuff in the air affected the flight of their ship. They tried to stay where the air was pure. They seemed to know more about the planet's air and all that kind of stuff, but they did not seem to know much about our agriculture. They also said that our people had entered into space and would not survive over a year. They then walked back under the ship and disappeared. They ducked a little bit when they went under it. The ship then seemed to hover. I heard a noise that sounded like a car motor idling. It was not loud, and it just took off slowly, forward above the ground in a gliding manner, and flew over the valley in direction of a friend's barn, and disappeared into the air after it was about 150 feet away. There was no heat, no blasting, no wind, dust or other, and the idling sound, light or anything else left behind when the ship took off. There we are, my friends. That conveniently brings my show to an end. I hope you enjoyed what we had. At least I've called up to date. I do not have an interview for next week, so I shall be back to my normal format and hope you can join me. Thank you very much for being with me. God bless you all.